cut her head off and put her body in the fiery furnace. This was Sunday morning, and he had to take the trunk to the station. He glanced about and saw Mary's shiny black purse lying atop his trousers on a chair. Good God! Though the air of the room was cold, beads of sweat broke onto his forehead, and his breath stopped. Quickly he looked round. His mother and sister were still sleeping. Buddy slept in the bed from which he had just arisen. Throw that purse away. Maybe he had forgotten other things. He searched the pockets of his trousers with nervous fingers and found the knife. He snapped it open and tiptoed to the window. Dried ridges of black blood were on the blade. He had to get rid of these at once. He put the knife into the purse and dressed hurriedly and silently. Throw the knife and purse into a garbage can. That's it. He put on his coat and found stuffed in a pocket the pamphlets Jan had given him. Throw these away, too. Oh, but... No. He paused and gripped the pamphlets in his black fingers as his mind filled with a cunning idea. Jan had given him these pamphlets, and he would keep them and show them to the police if he were ever questioned. That's it. He would take them to his room at Dalton's and put them in a dresser drawer. He would say that he had not even opened them and had not wanted to. He would say that he had taken them only because Jan had insisted. He shuffled the pamphlets softly so that the paper would not rustle and read the titles. Race Prejudice on Trial. The Negro Question in the United States. Black and White Unite and Fight. But that did not seem so dangerous. He looked at the bottom of a pamphlet and saw a black and white picture of a hammer and a curving knife. Below it, he read a line that said, "Issued by the Communist Party of the United States." Now that did seem dangerous. He looked further and saw a pen and ink drawing of a white hand clasping a black hand in solidarity, and remembered the moment when Jan had stood on the running board of the car and had shaken hands with him. That had been an awful moment of hate and shame. Yes, he would tell them that he was afraid of Reds, that he had not wanted to sit in the car with Jan and Mary, that he had not wanted to eat with them. He would say that he had done so only because it had been his job. He would tell them that it was the first time he had ever sat at a table with white people. He stuffed the pamphlets into his coat pocket and looked at his watch. It was 10 minutes until 7. He had to hurry and pack his clothes. He had to take that trunk to the station at 8:30. Then fear rendered his legs like water. Suppose Mary had not burned. Suppose she was still there, exposed to view. He wanted to drop everything and rush back and see. But maybe even something worse had happened. Maybe they had discovered that she was dead, and maybe the police were looking for him. Should he not leave town right now? Gripped by the same impelling excitement that had had hold of him when he was carrying Mary up the stairs, he stood in the middle of the room. No. He would stay. Things were with him. No one suspected that she was dead. He would carry through and blame the thing upon Jan. He got his gun from beneath the pillow and put it in his shirt. He tiptoed from the room, looking over his shoulder at his mother and sister and brother sleeping. He went down the steps to the vestibule and into the street. It was white and cold. Snow was falling, and an icy wind blew. The streets were empty. Tucking the purse under his arm, he walked to an alley where a garbage can stood covered with snow. Was it safe to leave it here? The men on the garbage trucks would empty the can early in the morning, and no one would be prying round on a day like this, with all the snow and its being Sunday. He lifted the top of the can and pushed the purse deep into a frozen pile of orange peels and mildewed bread. He replaced the top and looked round. No one was in sight. He went back to the room and got his suitcase from under the side of the bed. His folks were still sleeping. In order to pack his clothes, he had to get to the dresser on the other side of the room. But how could he get there, with the bed on which his mother and sister slept standing squarely in the way? God damn. He wanted to wave his hand and blot them out. They were always too close to him, so close that he could never have any way of his own. He eased to the bed and stepped over it. His mother stirred slightly, then was still. He pulled open a dresser drawer and took out his clothes and piled them in the suitcase. While he worked, there hovered before his eyes an image of Mary's head lying on the wet newspapers, the curly black ringlets soaked with blood.
Vega!
He sucked his breath in and whirled about, his eyes glaring. His mother was leaning on her elbow in bed. He knew at once that he should not have acted frightened.
What's the matter, boy?
She asked in a whisper. Nothing, he answered, whispering too.
You jumped like something bit you.
Oh, leave me alone. I got to pack.
He knew that his mother was waiting for him to give an account of himself, and he hated her for that. Why couldn't she wait until he told her of his own accord? And yet he knew that if she waited, he would never tell her.
You get the job?
Yeah.
What they paying you?
20.
You started already?
Yeah.
When?
Last night.
I wonder what made you so late.
I had to work, he drawled with impatience.
You didn't get in till after fall.
He turned and looked at her.
I got in at 2.
It was after 4, Bigger,
she said, turning and straining her eyes to look at an alarm clock above her head.
I tried to wait up for you, but I couldn't. When I heard you come in, I looked up at the clock, and it was after 4.
I knew when I got in, Ma.
But Bigger, it was after 4.
It was just a little after 2.
Oh, Lord, if you want it to, then let it be 2, for all I care. You act like you scared of something.
Now, what you want to start a fuss for?
A fuss? Boy?
Before I get out of bed, you pick on me.
Becca, I'm not picking on you, honey. I'm glad you got the job.
You don't talk like it.
He felt that his acting in this manner was a mistake. If he kept on talking about the time he had gotten in last night, he would so impress it upon her that she would remember it, and perhaps say something later on that would hurt him. He turned away and continued packing. He had to do better than this. He had to control himself.
You want to eat?
Yeah.
I'll fix you something.
Okay.
You going to stay on the place?
Yeah.
He heard her getting out of bed. He did not dare look round now. He had to keep his head turned while she dressed.
How you like the people, Bigger?
They all right.
You don't act like you glad.
Oh, Ma, for Christ's sake, you want me to cry?
Bigger, sometimes I wonder what makes you act like you do.
He had spoken in the wrong tone of voice. He had to be careful. He fought down the anger rising in him. He was in trouble enough without getting into a fuss with his mother.
You got a good job now,
his mother said.
You ought to work hard and keep it and try to make a man out of yourself. Someday you'll want to get married and have a home of your own. You got your chance now. You always said you never had a chance. Now you got one.
He heard her move about, and he knew that she was dressed enough for him to turn round. He strapped the suitcase and set it by the door. Then he stood at the window, looking wistfully out at the feathery flakes of falling snow.
Bigger, what's wrong with you?
He whirled.
Nothing,
he said, wondering what change she saw in him.
Nothing. You just worry me, that's all,
he concluded, feeling that, even if he did say something wrong, He had to fight her off him now. He wondered just how his words really did sound. Was the tone of his voice this morning different from other mornings? Was there something unusual in his voice since he had killed Mary? Could people tell he had done something wrong by the way he acted? He saw his mother shake her head and go behind the curtain to prepare breakfast. He heard a yawn. He looked and saw that Vera was leaning on her elbow, smiling at him.
You get the job?
Yeah.
How much you making?
Oh, Vera, ask Ma. I done told her everything.
Goody, Bigger got a job,
sang Vera.
Oh, shut up, he said.
Leave him alone, Vera,
the mother said.
What's the matter?
What's the matter with him all the time? Asked the mother.
Oh, Bigger,
said Vera, tenderly and plaintively.
That boy just ain't got no sense, that's all,
the mother said.
He won't even speak a decent word to you. Turn your head so I can dress, Vera said.
Bigger looked out the window. He heard someone say,
Aw,
and he knew that Buddy was awake.
Turn your head, Buddy,
Vera said.
Okay.
Bigger heard his sister rushing into her clothes.
You can look now,
Vera said. He saw Buddy sitting up in bed, rubbing his eyes. Vera was sitting on the edge of a chair, with her right foot hoisted upon another chair, buckling her shoes. Bigger stared vacantly in her direction. He wished that he could rise up through the ceiling and float away from this room forever.
I wish you wouldn't look at me,
Vera said.
Huh? Said Bigger,
looking in surprise at her pouting lips. Then he noticed what she meant, and poked out his lips at her. Quickly, she jumped up and threw one of her shoes at him. It sailed past his head and landed against the window, rattling the panes.
I told you not to look at me!
Vera screamed. Bigger stood up, his eyes red with anger.
I just wish you had hit me, he said.
You, Vera?
The mother called.
Ma, make him stop looking at me,
Vera wailed.
Wasn't nobody looking at her,
Bigger said.
You looked under my dress when I was buttoning my shoes.
I just wish you had hit me,
Bigger said again.
I ain't no dog,
Vera said.
Come on in the kitchen and dress, Vera,
the mother said.
He makes me feel like a dog.
Vera sobbed with her face buried in her hands, going behind the curtain.
Boy, said Buddy, I tried to keep awake till you got in last night, but I couldn't. I had to go to bed at 3. I was so sleepy I could hardly keep my eyes open.
I was here before then, Bigger said.
Oh, no. I was up.
I know when I got in. They looked at each other in silence.
Okay,
Buddy said. Bigger was uneasy. He felt that he was not handling himself right.
You get the job?
Buddy asked.
Yeah.
Driving?
Yeah. What kind of a car is it?
A Buick.
Can I ride with you sometime?
Sure. Soon as I get settled.
Buddy's questions made him feel a little more at ease. He always liked the adoration Buddy showed him.
Gee, that's the kind of job I want,
Buddy said.
It's easy.
Will you see if you can find me one?
Sure. Give me time.
Got a cigarette?
Yeah.
They were silent, smoking. Bigger was thinking of the furnace. Had Mary burned? He looked at his watch. It was 7 o'clock. Ought he go over right now without waiting for breakfast? Maybe he had left something lying round that would let them know Mary was dead. But if they slept late on Sunday mornings, as Mr. Dalton had said, they would have no reason to be looking round down there.
Bessie was by last night,
Buddy said. Yeah?
She said she saw you in Ernie's kitchen shack with some white folks?
Yeah. I was driving him last night.
She was talking about you and her getting married.
Hmm.
How come gals that way, Bigger?
Soon as a guy get a job, they want to marry. Damn if I know.
You got a good job now. You can get a better gal than Bessie,
Buddy said. Although he agreed with Buddy, he said nothing.
I'm going to tell Bessie,
Vera called. If you do, I'll break your neck, Bigger said.
Hush that kind of talk in here,
the mother said.
Oh, yeah,
Buddy said.
I met Jack last night. He said you almost murdered old Gus.
I ain't having nothing to do with that gang no more, Bigger said emphatically.
But Jack's all right,
Buddy said. Well, Jack, but none of the rest. Gus and G.H. and Jack seem far away to Bigger now, in another life, and all because he had been in Dalton's home for a few hours and had killed a white girl. He looked round the room, seeing it for the first time. There was no rug on the floor, and the plastering on the walls and ceiling hung loose in many places. There were two worn iron beds, four chairs, an old dresser, and a drop-leaf table on which they ate. This was much different from Dalton's home. Here, all slept in one room. There, he would have a room for himself alone. He smelt food cooking, and remembered that one could not smell food cooking in Dalton's home. Pots could not be heard rattling all over the house. Each person lived in one room, and had a little world of his own. He hated this room, and all the people in it, including himself. Why did he and his folks have to live like this? What had they ever done? Perhaps they had not done anything. Maybe they had to live this way precisely because none of them, in all their lives, had ever done anything, right or wrong. That mattered much.
Fix the table, Vera. Breakfast ready,
the mother called.
Yes'm.
Bigger sat at the table and waited for food. Maybe this would be the last time he would eat here. He felt it keenly, and it helped him to have patience. Maybe someday he would be eating in jail. Here he was, sitting with them, and they did not know that he had murdered a white girl and cut her head off and burned her body. The thought of what he had done, the awful horror of it, the daring associated with such actions, formed for him for the first time in his fear-ridden life a barrier of protection between him and a world he feared. He had murdered and had created a new life for himself. It was something that was all his own, and it was the first time in his life he had had anything that others could not take from him. Yes, he could sit here calmly and eat and not be concerned about what his family thought or did. He had a natural wall from behind which he could look at them. His crime was an anchor, weighing him safely in time. It added to him a certain confidence, which his gun and knife did not. He was outside of his family now, over and beyond them. They were incapable of even thinking that he had done such a deed, and he had done something which even he had not thought possible. Though he had killed by accident, not once did he feel the need to tell himself that it had been an accident. He was black, and he had been alone in a room where a white girl had been killed. Therefore, he had killed her. That was what everybody would say anyhow, no matter what he said. And in a certain sense, he knew that the girl's death had not been accidental. He had killed many times before. Only on those other times, there had been no handy victim or circumstance to make visible or dramatic his will to kill. His crime seemed natural. He felt that all of his life had been leading to something like this. It was no longer a matter of dumb wonder as to what would happen to him and his black skin. He knew now. the hidden meaning of his life, a meaning which others did not see and which he had always tried to hide, had spilled out. No, it was no accident, and he would never say that it was. There wasn't